KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on this morning's opening forum hour, we'll talk about blogging in an hour that will feature a conversation with some of the nation's leading bloggers. How much are bloggers affecting the political process, and are major bloggers becoming too much insiders or getting co-opted by politicians and power politics? We'll also discuss the ethics of blogging and a number of other relevant issues in an hour, which will include your calls and emails after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. Whether gossipy or serious, muckraking or politically partisan, no one would deny the escalating influence and ongoing impact of the major blogs on opinion shaping, on public policy, and on the political process. Often positioning themselves outside of the political mainstream, bloggers are increasingly being courted by politicians and political power brokers. Blogosphere stars of different political stripes are getting special treatment from office holders who realize just by the numbers of visitors some blogs attract, the increasing role blogs continue to play, and their ongoing impact on the shape of the political landscape. Some opine that internet political activists are gaining parity with major interest groups such as NARAL, the NAACP, or unions. As Henry Farrell, a George Washington University political scientist, argues, bloggers may be neither pure journalists nor pure activists nor pure campaign operatives, but their influence grows. And in this morning's opening hour of Forum, we want to talk with a number of bloggers, and in the course of the hour, which will include your calls and emails, better understand the entire phenomenon of blogging in the blogosphere. And let me tell you who is joining us for the hour. We want to welcome first Marcos Melitzis, who is the founder of DailyCos.com in Berkeley, and he joins us by phone this morning from the East Bay. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Also say good morning to Josh Trevino, who's here in studio, co-founder of Red State, and he's now vice president of public policy for Pacific Research Institute in San Francisco. Welcome.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. Anna Marie Cox is also joining us. She's the author of Dog Days and is the original voice of Wonket.com. She's in the nation's capital, but will be here in San Francisco tomorrow, and we'll tell you about that so you can see her in the flesh. Welcome, Anna Marie Cox.
Hello there.
Hello to you. We'll also be joined in the course of this hour by Glenn Reynolds, who is professor of law at University of Tennessee in Knoxville and founder of Instapundent.com. And we're going to be talking also with John Battelle, who is chairman of Federated Media in Marin County and author of a book called The Search. And welcome, John Battelle.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. In fact, let me begin, if I may, with you, John Battelle, because I should mention John Battelle is currently on leave from the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. And I guess you look at blogs kind of as sort of a performance art, like jazz, and something that seems to grow by word of mouth, but you also compare it to talk radio.
Yeah, I do. Blogs are a conversational medium. It's sort of like publications in real time, and I noticed they're very similar to magazines, except for one difference, which is they're not a packaged good, which is how most media is consumed in this country, one to many. They're a conversation, and like talk radio, they're a conversation where a few people participate, often, you know, with like Daily Coast, you have hundreds and hundreds of comments, but still, compared to the millions of people that are reading, it's a relatively small number of people engaged directly in the conversation, but everyone else is sort of voyeuristically listening to that conversation and watching it unfold, and I think that that's an important part of the differences in how blogs work compared to other media.
Is it also fair to say, though, just carrying this analogy of talk radio a little bit, notwithstanding your genial host here, but the more outrageous and the more sensational blogs are, the more they have people becoming participants in this voyeuristic enterprise?
Not really. I wouldn't say. If you look at the participants on this call and the folks that are doing generally very well in the blogosphere, it's those that have a very sharp or compelling voice, but they are kept in check by their own audience. If you go too far, or you say too much, or you kind of, you know, go way out there, you tend to only attract folks who also live way out there. It's more, as I said, a conversation, and a conversation that is, that is moderated literally by the audience.
And how is it measured in terms of success? You got media citations and citations of other blogs mainly?
I think that plus, depending on where you are and what you're blogging about, you know, which parties you get invited to, as well as certainly your ability to move opinion and to bloggers relentlessly count the number of inbound links they have from other bloggers and other sites, as well as their overall traffic, which is very important as well.
John Battelle, again, chairs Federated Media Marin County and is author of The Search. He's currently on leave as UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism professor. And Marcos Melitzis is founder of DailyKos.com. They're Berkeley-based and really one of the most successful blogs in the country, highest actually politically in terms of the kind of traffic they have. And I believe only a technology blog is bigger, Marcos, is that right?
Correct. Slash, that would be the biggest.
Let's talk about what you do and how you do it. I mean, in a sense, you position yourself pretty much in terms of, I guess, what we could broadly or generically call liberal politics, no?
But yeah, without a doubt. You know, when I started blogging back in 2002, it was a very difficult time for people who were liberal. I mean, this was right at the end of the Afghanistan War, kind of in the lead up to the Iraq War, and it was a very politically confining time for liberals. Any kind of criticism of the administration was considered to be treason or un-American. So it was in that environment that a lot of liberal bloggers came out. I mean, it was one of the few places you could get liberal voices.
This was a lot of the Dean phenomenon, too, really, wasn't it?
Well, in a lot of ways. I mean, I think the bloggers fueled a lot of the Dean stuff. So it wasn't necessarily Dean came first. I think the bloggers came first and allowed Dean to emerge when, you know, at the time, not a lot of people were paying attention to the presidential race.
I looked at your blog just this week, and I saw some material about Al Gore's speech and a call for a special counsel, so a lot on the Alito hearings, on Senate races coming up, on Abramoff in Montana. A lot of this is really pretty much informative news, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very almost technical in nature. I mean, it's a very elections-oriented website, so it's a lot of polls, a lot of talking about demographics, a lot of talking about the Senate and House races. And there are blogs that talk more about issues and about policy. Daily Coast is really a place where people talk about elections and how Democrats can get elected to the Senate and House, and in 2008, the White House.
But you have pop-ups.
Pop-ups, what do you mean?
I was looking on the blog, and suddenly I saw these pop-ups, sort of lighter, more levity-type material, at least.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, you can't be 100 serious all the time. You have to kind of mix it up and be lighter at times and funny at times and things like that. And I think that's all part of successful blogging, people who can really find that balance between the really serious stuff, the stuff that's outrageous, the stuff that makes you smile. I think those are the people that are more successful in the blogging endeavors.
Marcos Melitzis, again, is founder of DailyKos.com and DailyKos.com, excuse me, and they have about 20 million unique visits a month, over 400,000 page views a day, and a really successful blog, very successful blog, the one that Anna Maria Cox ran, the original Wonkette, and the founder of Wonkette. And Anna Marie, I guess the blog, the Wonkette blog, and I want to say something about your novel, too, because I know now that that's very much your passion, but it was a blog that became identified with gossip, humor, sarcasm, parody, I mean, mainly those kinds of things.
Yeah, I was going to offer that it is sort of the polar opposite of Marcos's blog, not because we have opposite political views. Actually, we probably have pretty similar political views. I'm on the left myself, but Wonkette is definitively, like, not technical, you know, not about elections, not about, you know, getting activism together or getting activists together. Wonkette was a very non-serious take on politics. I often refer to it as if you're going to have a balanced media diet, if you know the New York Times is your roughage and Daily Kos is your, I don't know, your whole grains, Wonkette would definitely be whipped cream.
Well, Wonkette was kind of built on a sex scandal, wasn't it? The Jessica Cutler sex scandal?
Well, I would say that that certainly prompted a lot of attention. I'm not sure if I would have been able to get any further after that if there hadn't been more to Wonkette besides a sex scandal. I like to think I brought some levity into people's day. There's a lot to want to get besides gossip. In fact, something I feel like I'm constantly telling people, reminding people that if you look at WantGet, the actual number of gossip items is pretty minimal. It's a lot more sort of Daily Show-esque in terms of mocking, you know, Jack Abramoff's fedora and that kind of thing.
Actually,
really.
Speaking of fedoras, I read a recent WantGet. They were a lot of attention paid to the hats that Condoleezza Rice and Laura Bush wear.
Yes, that's right. They're lovely. They look like they're going to Churchill Downs or something, don't they? The horse races. Yes, WantGet looked a lot at fashion in general in the nation's capital, which there isn't a lot of. It's mainly Ann Taylor and power suits. But that's one of my obsessions, and we look for all kinds of opportunities to talk about dominatrix outfits, and Condi Rice offers those up as well.
Well, you had in the recent one I looked at also some material on Dick Cheney's gout, as well as on George Galloway drinking milk like a cat out of a saucer. But there is also some serious discourse. I mean, you are politically informing people, aren't you?
I think so. And I think, again, much like The Daily Show, you, in order to get the jokes that are made on WantGet, you have to know what's going on. You have to have been following politics a little bit. And unlike The Daily Show, and I think this is one small advantage, is that if you don't understand a joke, there is a link there that will take you to the article that is the serious basis for whatever, you know, we're choosing to mock that day. And I think that is educational, although, again, not anything like either Daily Coast or Red State. I know you have Jeff on, right? That's also another very that's a place that you can go to educate yourself about issues as well as to spout your opinion or read other people's opinions. I'm not sure how much education you would get from WantGet if that's what you're looking for.
Talking to Anna Marie Cox, she's the author of Dog Days, by the way, a novel which is a roman à clé and very much about the Kerry campaign, I think it's safe to say, about Melanie Thornton, a young communications staffer. This is your first novel, isn't it?
It is, and it's. I would correct you on the roman à clé, though. It is more of a fantasia about the Kerry campaign, let's say. It's a satire taking off from where the Kerry campaign started, which was pretty absurd to begin with. But it sort of takes the ridiculousness of sex scandals and of media in Washington and tries to push it a little over the edge. That said, You're right. There are some recognizable figures, let's say, in the blog.
Is there
you got me. In the novel.
In the novel, right. Well, back to the blog, though, for a moment. I mean, is there concern? I was reading your blog, and I was thinking about Spy magazine. I was remembering there was a lot of brouhaha and concern about libel suits. Is there concern with WantGet about libel suits?
I'm pretty sure that there isn't much concern there. I'm happy to say that WantGet is owned by someone else. So I've been able to forward anything I've gotten from a lawyer to someone higher up the food chain than me. But there is very little original reporting on WantGet, and I don't pretend that there is. To the extent that there is gossip on WantGet, it usually starts with an item that I've taken from the Washington Post or the New York Times. And I will just say what everyone's thinking beyond that item. But it doesn't. There's not a pretense to offering fresh dirt, let's say. I mean, there's a lot of dirty talk, but not a lot of actual original dirt.
Well, I noticed that Glenn Reynolds, who we'll be talking to later in this hour as well, described you when you were working for WantGet as a hired gun. Does that make a difference that someone else is your employer and paying your checks?
I think it definitely does, and I think I'm very lucky to make a transition away from WantGet while it still wasn't a job. I think the danger in having someone pay you to blog, of course, there's an obvious benefit there, which is the check that you get every month. But the danger is that you're not fueled by your own passion. I mean, I think that the reason why blogs are have struck a chord with a lot of Americans is that you were talking about the comparison talk radio and whether or not blogs have the outrageousness of talk radio, and that's why people tune in. I agree with John Battelle that it's not that blogs are more outrageous, but I do think there is the same kind of passion. I think people really respond to the passion that bloggers usually have to have because they're not being paid by someone. You don't start a blog in order to make money. And so I think if someone else is paying your salary and you're not doing it out of, you know, a hunger to have your voice heard, then there's a danger of burnout. I'm very, very happy to say that I have left before I got burned out.
So Anna Marie Cox has left before burnout and published the novel Dog Days. She's the original voice of WantGet.com, and she'll be talking at the Commonwealth Club with Tabitha Soren tomorrow evening here in San Francisco, and be at Barnes & Noble on Friday if you'd like to meet her. 6:30 at the Commonwealth Club and 7:30 at Barnes & Noble. That was a well-meant plug. Josh Trevino is here with us in studio. He is co-founder of Red State, and a man I should mention who has red hair and a red beard, but it has nothing to do with red state, but now has left that and is vice president of public policy for Pacific Research Institute here in San Francisco. A lot of red state started because of Daily Kos, I guess, or because of this phenomenon of the, what you saw as the liberal blogging, huh?
It did, yes. And let me just clarify for the listeners. I'm sort of the I guess you say the Steve Wozniak of red state, present at the creation, but no longer there.
Was it in a garage?
almost. It was at a kitchen table. Very small. There were three of us in the beginning. Me, Ben Dominich, Mike Krempaski. Ben and Mike are both still on the Red State board. Very active. They do great work. Red State did begin. It was I initially conceived of it in March 04 when I kind of got the sense that and I think it was an accurate perception that the left in American politics was definitely ahead of the right in terms of online mobilization. A lot of that was born of I guess, the out-of-power nature of the left at the time, and certainly with necessity being the mother of invention. You had the right, which was out of power in the early 90s, and, you know, as a consequence, was able to mobilize talk radio. And the left has done the same thing, really, I guess, in the early years of this decade as well, kind of led the way forward in online communication. And so folks like Marcos Melitzis and Duncan Black and so forth were really able to take that sense of disenfranchisement and turn it into something quite remarkable in terms of community building, online mobilization, and so forth. And we decided that it was time not only for the right to catch up, but also to do its own thing in online mobilization. One of the interesting things about the right wing in America is that in terms of, and I don't have the exact stats in front of me, but as a rule of thumb, really for the last generation, certainly since the late 1960s, in terms of small individual donations, and this runs contrary to stereotype, conservatives generally outpace left-wing candidates in donations. And that was something that we kind of looked at and said, you know, this is something that's applicable to the web. The individual who's interested in getting involved at a personal level, who can provide donations to candidates and causes, really needs this tool to help mobilize them for conservative activism. And so that's something that we set out to do. And I think Red State's been fairly successful so far.
In terms of raising money?
In terms of raising money, in terms of generating an online conservative community, I'm not familiar with the web stats. Haven't been gone from it for 6 months now, but it's quite big, and I
it's
understand.
It's one of the top-rated blogs. Yeah.
It is one of the top-rated blogs. It's definitely in the top 10. I don't think that it's anywhere close to where Daily Kos is in terms of traffic or readership, certainly not in terms of ad rates, but it's up there, and I'm proud of what we did.
You're also, I mean, ideologically, you describe yourself as conservative. You've
sure.
been very supportive of the Bush administration, of the unborn, as you call them, in other words, of
sure.
choice,
mm-hmm.
Against choice and for life or pro-life, as it's all too often in the parlance described and so forth. I was surprised to see on the blog recently, though, some very strong words about the Bell South monopoly. So, there are all kinds of targets. It's not necessarily put... It would be easy and facile, in other words, to put you in a category and say, oh, because you're conservative, you wouldn't go after a big corporation, but you do.
Well, again, let me put the caveat that nothing,
you're not with them
nothing
anymore,
that's appeared
right?
on Red State
yeah.
is related to me at the moment. In terms of that particular post, which is done by a friend of mine named Eric Erickson, let me just give a general comment, not specifically pertaining to that, but in general, and this really holds true for any website. Once you see folks advocating for or against certain corporations and so forth, it really does behoove you, the reader, to pay attention to what I'll call their extracurricular activities, who they're employed by, what clients or so forth that they may have. And it's a critical reading skill that's going to become more important as blogs become bigger and more influential.
Do you think that... Well, for example, that you get people. I know you welcome dissent, and I say you. I'm using the broad Red State you.
Okay.
Let's correct that and just say Red State encourages dissent. But you can also get people who pose as conservatives, and this I'm sure happens on DailyKos.com too.
Sure.
And want to argue from an antithetical point of view.
Well, it might be overstating things to say that, you know, Red State or any political blog encourages dissent. There's varying levels of tolerance per site. That you get. And this actually plays into a comment that John made earlier that blogs are, the phrase that he used was kept in check. And John, if I'm misinterpreting you, let me know. I don't actually agree, really, that blogs are kept in check by their communities. They may be kept in check in sort of a factual data collection sense. But in terms of the specific points of view, the specific obsessions, the specific points of advocacy that communities endorse, it's been my experience, borne out by Red State and borne out by observing other blogs, that the community will actually tend to push the principles and themselves to farther to I don't want to use the word extreme, but I guess it really is the best word, extreme solutions and so forth. And there's a few examples of that based upon my experience at Red State. One,
isn't there also self-policing that goes on, though?
There is self-policing, again, to the extent that there is factual self-policing. But the difference is that blogs and mobs, groups of people, are very good at data gathering, collation, and verification. They're not so good at wisdom and analysis. And so that's why, for example, if I was given a choice between getting the collective wisdom of Daily Kos or Red State on, say, the 06 elections versus spending a half hour with Michael Barone, I'd take Barone, hands down.
Josh Rivino, again, is co-founder of Red State, vice president now of public policy for Pacific Research Institute. John Battelle, let me go back to you and let's talk. I mean, is there a blogger code of ethics?
There certainly have been attempts at this, and I'll certainly take that point. I think in particular when you're talking in blogs that are in communities that have specific political points of view or agendas, that's correct. My experience has been more in the blogs around journalism and technology, and I've found that almost always your readers know more than you do. That's been the case in the sites that I've authored personally and the sites that I've been involved with, like Boing Boing. The readers are very quick to correct you and very quick to call you out. As a matter of fact, we certainly have the most comments on any of the blogs I'm involved with when we stray into politics because things get very heated very quickly. But there, I think there is a code of ethics, written or unwritten, at the company that I run, which is an aggregator or a network of blogs. We have a very clear set of what we call mores, sort of community standards and values that have to do with integrity and transparency. I can't agree more with the comment about transparency. You need to understand where someone's coming from if they're making statements that that readers are going to take either as fact or as informed. So I think there is at least an unwritten code, and in some cases there's even one that's written depending on where you are.
What about the argument that we keep hearing and even seeing on many of the blogs themselves, that many of these political blogs are becoming co-opted by the political establishment? There are certainly bloggers invited to the hearings, to the Alito hearings. There were bloggers who were bragging about personal contact with Karl Rove. And on the other side, of course, in fact, Marcos Melitzis might want to talk about, somebody talked about a fawning letter that he got from Senator Boxer. I mean, it goes both ways. But how much is this co-opting?
Well, I do believe that, power goes where power finds value. And as any voice, no matter whether it's on the radio or on the Internet, gathers an audience of influence and power, then folks in power are going to try to curry favor with that voice. And I think that's going to just continue to happen. It always has, and it always will. And always there will be reactions to it. New blogs or new media outlets will spring up in response to the supposed or real co-option of those voices.
We're coming up on a break here, but Marcos and Josh, maybe get a quick comment from you two and Anna on this.
Me first?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to talk about power, and to me it's kind of silly because it's not the kind of power that traditionally you see. People want to look for leaders in any kind of new movement, and so they think that if you talk to Daily Kos, if you talk to Marco, suddenly I can deliver hundreds of thousands of people or money or this or that, and it's not true. I mean, all I am is I've created a place where people can come and together they can collectively decide how to do activism. I can't tell them what to do. I can push and pull in any direction I want, and if they don't want to go there, they're not going to go there. So it's not power in that sense that I can actually deliver anything. So it's pretty silly for them to try to wine and dine me because I can't deliver anything.
Josh Trevino, want to comment on this quickly?
My only comment is that Marcos's comment is fairly disingenuous. He had a secret plan to dismantle the DLC a while back, which he ended up not unveiling. So the idea that he's not a leader is I think, disingenuously self-effacing. There are leaders in the blog movement, and since we have limited time, I'll leave it at that and return after the break.
All right, well, we are coming up on a break. I'm sure Marcos may want to respond to that and hear from Anna Marie Cox. We're also going to hear in the course of the hour from Glenn Reynolds, who is professor of law. A lot of people who have been educated in law seem to be in the blogosphere, or at least running things in the blogosphere. We'll talk with him when we return, and I want to thank John Battelle, the chairman of the Federated Media in Marin County and author of The Search. When we come back, also your calls and emails. If you'd like to join us, please do. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, whether you're listening to us on radio, Internet, or Sirius Satellite. You can join the conversation, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour about political blogs, bloggers, blogging, assessing their importance and influence, and your calls are welcome. Again, you can join the program by calling our toll-free number and are welcome to do so. It's 866-733-6786. You can also communicate to us questions or comments you might have by email, and our email address is forum@kqed.org. Talking with Anna Marie Cox, the original voice of Wonkette.com and author of Dog Days, Josh Trevino, who is co-founder of Red State, Marcos Melitzis, who is founder of DailyCoast.com in Berkeley. Spoke earlier with John Battelle, chair of the Federated Media in Marin County and author of The Search. And actually, Marcos, I wanted to give you a chance to respond here because disingenuous, I think, was the word that was used to characterize. And I had maybe a follow-up question.
Sure. I mean, it may be disingenuous, but the question was whether I was being co-opted and if there was being co-option because of the power issue. There was no guarantee that this campaign would have been successful. I have an agenda. There's no doubt about that. Whether that agenda can be effective, it's a different story. If it was up to me and if I had all this power, Democrats would be a lot different. They'd be filibustering a leader right now. We'd have Democrats elected in different races. All these things that would have happened if I had the so-called power, not happening. So I'm not really too enamored of myself at the moment.
Well, there's another kind of power in blogging, and it comes from marketing. And you've said you're stingy on links, and I've got a quote of yours where you said, I don't use blog rolls as a marketing tool, but you do, well, you promote your own music, it seems to me, at least that's what I saw. But also, there was a comment by someone who may have been taking you to task, maybe not, said you initially wanted the blog for ad revenue and for building a political consulting business.
You know, when I started blogging in 2002, and I'm sure all the bloggers on this call could agree with that, is blogging was not a tool for anything except wasting your time. I mean, there was nobody reading the blogs. Instapundit, Glenn Reynolds, I think, was the biggest blog at the time, and he was getting maybe 3,000-4,000 visits a day. So, I mean, this was a tiny, tiny little niche medium, and there was no expectation that it would go anywhere. I mean, none of us thought, I think, those of us who started blogging at that time thought that anything good would have come of this. And had we said, yeah, this is going to become a big, powerful, influential medium in 3 years, I would have laughed at that person because there's absolutely no sign that that was going to be the case. This has been a big shock to me. And anybody who thinks that people got into blogging in 2002 thinking it was a path to fame and riches and other work, they'd be deluding themselves.
Well, Anna Marie Cox, let me get you back here because we're talking about the ethics of blogging and how it's taken a trajectory in terms of defining itself in the blogosphere as things have moved along. You once said you didn't mind ruining someone's day, but you wouldn't do anything to ruin their life. When did that ethos come about?
Oh, that's been from day one. That's actually been my personal motto ever since I started sort of writing snark, let's say, you can't, you know, you don't want to get anyone fired or divorced. But that's a responsibility, I guess, just I personally am unwilling to take on. And especially since I started blogging, my feeling has been if someone is important enough in Washington or in the nation that their extramarital affairs or their drug problem matters to people, then that should be in the A1 section of the post. It shouldn't be on a blog.
How much influence do you think, Josh Trevino, you wield or has been wielded when you were part of the whole Red State phenomenon or ongoing? I mean, for example, there was a whole analysis of the majority leader race, which we covered last week, and they seem to be pushing Shadegg of Arizona. Is that going to have influence in a major way?
Well, it'll have an influence to an extent. Obviously, I can only speak to my own experience and that of Red State. Red State does have some influence, but you have to understand also that because of the position of the Republican Party being in the majority and having the power that it does, there's an equal effort to co-opt Republican blogs on the part of the institutional power holders as there is to for the blogs to influence those power holders. So I can't really tell you know, to what extent in the corridors of power Red State was ever discussed or what influence it had. I don't think it had that much, at least while I was there. That's probably changing now. I don't think they're going to affect the race for majority leader that much. To be perfectly honest, if there are media outlets that do affect it, it's going to be more traditional outlets such as Club for Growth, such as National Review. Red State's going to factor pretty low on that list.
Well, we are going to go to your calls and emails forthwith, but first we wanted to talk with Glenn Reynolds, who is professor of law at University of Tennessee, Knoxville, known in some quarters as the Blog Father. It's the second most popular blog, actually about 200,000 views a day, which was started back in August of 2001. And Glenn, first of all, welcome. Glad to have you here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
When you talk about your whole involvement in blogging and you talk about 9/11 as really a turning point and what politicized you, I guess.
Well, my blog was much more lighthearted before that. I mean, I wrote about, you know, FBI abuses and various things. But, you know, I was also posting on contest on who had the best abs at the Video Music Awards. I supported Alicia Keys' candidacy and stuff like that. And I think that, you know, after 9/11, everything kind of hardened up.
And you hardened up in being kind of what you've continued to describe yourself as, a libertarian hawk?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, I think that, you know, if it weren't for the war, I would be thought of as sort of a quirky libertarian blogger. And, you know, people always thought of me as leaning kind of left before the war, and really not much else has changed.
Is your blog pretty much your blog? I mean, your opinions, your idiosyncrasies, your ideology, all that?
Oh yeah. It's pretty narrowly focused on what I find interesting. I only have guest bloggers on generally when I'm on vacation. So it's just nothing but me the rest of the time.
And you take interest in, I was looking at your blog, you write about Pluto and NASA and all kinds of things that may be outside of the political realm.
Yeah, I'm a sort of a techie guy, and I write about nanotechnology, which is something I'm very interested in, and assorted gadgetry, and, you know, that kind of thing rather a lot.
What's the punch and impact of blogs in terms of what we were talking about before you joined us? That is, are they really influencing politics, and are you getting kind of royal treatment from people in Washington who want your support or cosset it?
Well, it's sort of an odd experience that, you know, you can be sucked up to and ignored simultaneously sometimes. But what I think blogs have is not so much power as influence. What blogs can do is take something that's not being talked about and get it talked about. What happens after it's talked about, I don't think blogs have enough oomph to really affect all that much. But I think they're able to sort of bypass the agenda setters, and that's a pretty big deal.
We're going to go to your phone calls. And again, Glenn Reynolds is professor of law, University of Tennessee in Knoxville, founder of Instapundit.com. And you can join us here toll-free at 866-733-6786 if you have something you want to add, or if you'd like to make a comment or raise a question. And let's go to Brian as our first caller. Brian, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to ask a question, kind of a rhetorical question. What is the purpose of blogs? And the answer is that it's essentially a disinformation campaign. A lot of the people doing these blogs don't have all the angles, don't really know what they're talking about. I mean, I know they're just doing opinions, but I want to suggest that it's really just the selfish American desire for attention, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
Because only Americans want attention.
Yes.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, I think I'm sorry. I'm jumping in.
Sonia Marie Cox. Yeah, go ahead.
I think that that question actually sort of dovetails nicely with Glenn's description of his blog. You know, it's 20, you know, all Glenn all the time. Blogs, of course, they're vanity projects because they have to be, because no one is, you know, most people aren't paid to do them. As for disinformation, I think that that's disinformation itself. I think that one thing that we've all sort of agreed upon here is that if your readers may not check you ideologically, but they are incredibly good about checking people on their facts. You know, myths don't last long in the blogosphere, and I think that that's one of the great things about them.
Josh Ravino, go ahead.
Sure. If I can just jump in real quick, 2 points. Myths do last quite a long time in the blogosphere, which is unfortunate. Second, Brian is correct. I'm wholly guilty of blogging to satisfy my own vanity and spread disinformation. That being said, that's going to change in coming years. You're going to find a lot more blogs springing up with specific agenda-driven issues. So, you know, ignore it. Characterize it as you will, and that's actually a fairly accurate characterization, but assume it's going to stay the same at your peril.
It's often characterized, though, Marcus Melisus and Glenn Reynolds, and let's just hear from you maybe some cogent remarks on this, as not being real journalism, and ergo not having perhaps or not deserving or warning the respect that real journalism with an institution behind it has.
Well, I think that question really betrays an ignorance about what blogging is, and nobody else has really spoken to really what a blog is. The blog is nothing more than a publishing tool. That's all it is. It's like a word processor or a video camera. It's a way to publish information. What information is published is entirely up to the blogger. So you could have the muckrakers, you could have the people doing disinformation, but you also have people doing real, genuine journalism, and you have people doing op-eds, and you have people doing essays, and you have people writing fiction and writing about their dogs and writing about food. There's nothing inherently bad or good about a blog. It's how that tool is wielded that really matters.
Glenn Reynolds agrees it's just a tool.
I totally agree with Marcos. You know, bloggers are journalists when what they do on their blog is journalism. They're literary critics when what they do on their blog is literary criticism. And they're pundits when what they do on their blog is punditry. Now, most of us tend to mix it up to some degree. And there's some really excellent, you know, firsthand reporting being done on some blogs. There's a lot more opining being done. And a lot of people mix it up. I occasionally do firsthand reporting. I sometimes even do video. And now I'm doing audio podcasts with interviews. And I guess that's journalism. On the other hand, you know, sometimes I post cat pictures, and that really isn't. Although, if you open up your newspaper and you apply the same test, you'll find that an awful lot of what's in there doesn't look much like journalism either, including the cat pictures.
Anna Marie Cox, dominated by men in the blogosphere?
Yes, at the moment, but I think that's changing. I think that, you know, technology, blogging is still a techie kind of thing, and it happens that men tend to be early adopters. They're the early adopters. But I think that there's definitely a lot of women coming up in the blogosphere, and there's sure to be more.
And there'll be more callers. Let's go to another call. And Rick, you're on. Good morning. Welcome to Forum.
Morning. It's fascinating to hear these voices of people that I've only known through their text. So hello, everybody. One of the things that I wonder in the midst of my, you know, real fascination and a certain extent obsession with what people are writing in the blogosphere is it's also seems quite hermetic. There's a lot of self-referentiality, a lot of people talking to and about one another, and I sometimes wonder if we're going to run into the same issue that we sometimes run into with media literacy, because, you know, a lot of ways blogs have helped push media literacy way, way forward. But media literacy often tends to create fans and sort of a subculture of people that are into the media rather than necessarily a whole of, you know, empower producers. And I'm worried that we're creating just as many fans as we are critics. That's my question.
Well, you've expressed your anxiety quite well. Anybody want to step up here and respond?
Well, it makes me think of what John Perry Barlow says, that inside any functioning anarchy, you find an old boys network holding things together. Blogs are pretty much an anarchy, and I think the natural tendency in an anarchy, actually, is for people to sort of form cliques and clubs, but then that's a natural human tendency in a lot of places.
They're what Howard Rangel once called virtual communities, then, aren't they?
No, that's a better way to call it. Yes, virtual communities. I like that. Call it that instead.
That's Glenn Reynolds, by the way, and I thank the caller. Go to more of your calls in a moment. Looking at some emails here, though. This comes from Leslie, who says, the whole reason that blogs have taken off, especially among the left, is that the mainstream media has abrogated its responsibility to inform. If this discussion were serious, you'd be talking a lot less about Cheney's gout and a lot more about what blogs are doing that mainstream media isn't. Well, I think we just referenced Cheney's gout once. You want to say something here, Josh?
Yeah, that's it's certainly a common victim myth on the left that blogs have arisen because mainstream media has abdicated in its duty, and it's almost word for word the same sort of victim myth that was prevalent on the right for so many years, that the mainstream media is against you. Far too many people confuse disagreement with abdication of virtue or abdication of morals or rectitude, what have you. So that has always struck me as a big red herring. The media does its job, sometimes poorly, sometimes well, but it doesn't follow from that. In the instances where it does it poorly or where it does it in a matter in a manner that you disagree with, that it is somehow abdicating its role.
But Marcos Melitzis, I think I heard a little subtextually in your remarks before that what got you started.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. The right wing noise machine, right? This massive media machine on the right, the Fox News and 700 Club, and this whole machine grew out of the fact that the right felt disenfranchised by the media at the time. And whether that's true or not, you know, I'm not going to get into it, but that's what motivated and fueled the rise of that right-wing conservative media machine. That's what's happening now, is that we have a what I'm calling traditional media that has been co-opted by conservative voices. I mean, you look at the Sunday morning talk show lineup, and it's conservative through and through. It's quite startling, actually. And I came from this environment where I didn't hear my voices being spoken about in the run-up to the Iraq War. I wasn't allowed to criticize the president, not even on domestic issues, because that was giving aid and comfort to the enemy. And I served. I wore combat boots. Nobody was going to tell me what I could or couldn't criticize because I knew what the Constitution said. And therefore, I started my little blog at a time when very few people were blogging and not a lot of people were reading them, just as an outlet for those frustrations. And I think that the fact that my site grew as quickly as it did and others like it is testament to the fact that there was a definite and clear market need for that kind of voice. The conservative blogs haven't grown that well because I think that they're well represented in the media landscape. Their voices are well represented. Ours are not.
Here's Brian, who writes, and this is an opinion, it seems to me the word blog originated as a defamatory term from a time when people posted inane accounts or logs of personal interest. The connotation of the term was much in the same vein as blah, 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 except when blog, blog, blog. Also seems to me that little has changed in the recent evolution of the blog. Just as soap operas serve a purpose for watchers who may need a surrogate life, blogs serve a purpose for readers who seem to need a surrogate opinions. You know what they say about opinions. All right, that's another voice heard from. A number of listeners want to know, though, about ways to locate blogs. For example, here's a listener who says, is there an efficient way to locate them, providing accurate and informed analysis or facts on any particular topics? If I wanted accurate information on health or nanotechnology or the unitary executive concept, how would I find a credible and authoritative blog? I think that's right up your line, Mr. Reynolds, because after all, you do write about nanotechnology.
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, the single best tool that I recommend for people who sort of aren't familiar with blogs is Technorati. And if you go to technorati.com, they actually have a collection of topic blogs, including one on nanotechnology. But one of the things that I recommend people do is if you've got a news story and you want to know more, copy the URL of the news story, plug it into Technorati and hit search, and you'll find all the blogs that are commenting on that story. And you'll get a rather wide range of views and analysis on what's omitted and what's misrepresented and what's accurate that helps you make up your own mind. And a few papers, like the Washington Post and to a lesser degree the New York Times, are actually starting to incorporate this sort of thing in their coverage. I think that's terrific. If I could just echo something Marco said, actually, the standard position you hear from sort of mainstream journalist apologists is, well, we get criticized from the left and right, so we must be doing a great job. And I actually don't think that follows at all. I think, in fact, news media made sort of a corporate financial decision about 20 years ago to de-emphasize the reporting of hard news and focus on other stuff. And they've suffered a lot for that, and I think it's created dissatisfaction kind of across the political spectrum.
Let me go to more of your calls. Doug joining us from Brooklyn, New York. Welcome to Forum. You're on the air.
Thanks. I sort of wanted to disagree with the idea that people don't get into it for the money. I think blogging is to now as screenwriting was probably to the 90s, and everybody wants to be the next Matt Damon, Ben Affleck with their Good Will Hunting. You know, a lot of your guests have book deals, and I think a lot of people have that sort of trickled down. People want the promise of perhaps getting exposed where they couldn't have before. I could send my writing to the New York Times and never get it published, but I can put it online in 2 seconds. And I think there is a great promise that a lot of people are trying to get in on. Sort of like we're seeing a sort of gold rush, I think, right now. A lot of it's speculative, but I think a lot of people are getting in with the idea, hey, there could be money in this for me.
Well, Doug, I thank you for your comments. And Anna Marie, I'm going to have to go to you on this. You've actually published a novel, and it had a lot to do with your reputation as a blogger, didn't it?
There is blogging in the novel, although fortunately there's not a lot of description of someone in the act of blogging because that would be pretty boring. I guess I disagree with the caller. I think that you may be motivated to do anything because of money, but that doesn't mean you're going to be any good at it. I would actually say that just because of a very few people have been lucky enough to transform, to sort of leverage their visibility in blogging to other things, like that doesn't. I don't think that's what people are looking at when they start up a blog. I mean, I think that the ratio of people who have had success with blogs to people who have blogs is more like the NBA than it is like screenwriting. I mean, there's a very few superstars out there, and also they didn't get there just because they wanted to be famous. I think there's a lot of hard work involved and not a guarantee of a payoff at all.
But the advantage is you can wear all the jewelry that the NBA players are not allowed to wear. David
right.
Stern's rules. So let me.
You don't have to wear pants.
Thank Doug for that call, and go to more of your calls. Doug, thanks. Dan, thanks. Thanks for waiting. Joining us from Tracy. Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My questions revolve around credibility, and the first one is, do the bloggers that are on your show today, do they feel that, you know, the attitude towards blogs is contributing anything to the degradation of trust and credibility in journalism in general? And the other question I have is, you know, is the blogosphere, is it looking to, you know, create any self-referencing standards along the lines of citing resources when opinions are stated, and also opening themselves up to counterpoint, you know, when certain perspectives are expressed? and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, a number of salient points there. Marcos, you want to respond first?
I mean, one of the hallmarks of blogging, I mean, he asked about credibility and whether, you know, we link to supporting material. I mean, that is one of the hallmarks of blogging, and something that can't be done in any other medium, is that any assertion that we make, factual assertion, you know, we back it up and we do so with a link, and that adds to credibility. Now, people then are able to go and check that source material, and they may interpret it differently, or they may say you analyze it improperly, or the source itself may be, you know, not that credible. But the fact is that you don't just make a statement, a fact, and let it sit there. You actually try to back it up with source material. So I think that adds to the credibility to the medium in a way that can't be done on television, where people can just say anything, and viewers have no idea whether it's true or not. They have to implicitly trust the person or trust the host to correct or essentially verify that that statement is true, and it doesn't necessarily always happen. So that to me is one of the attractiveness of blogs in general, is that it allows people to really decide for themselves whether that source and that material and that opinion is actually valid.
Josh Trevino, let's have you weigh in here.
And yet, if blogs were inherently more susceptible to fact-checking, to veracity, and so forth, one would expect that the advent of blogs in public discourse would have led to a betterment of that discourse. And I don't see much evidence that that's the case at all. If anything, it's simply added more to the noise. The signal-to-noise ratio is quite low. Quite honestly, I don't think that in the long run you're going to see blogs notably increasing the level of comedy, civility, or wisdom in public discourse.
Well, especially one thinks of civility, and there has to be a book on this subject. I actually discussed it with Stuart Brand, the founder of the Whole Earth Catalog and The Well, about how you can find a sort of flaming that goes on the Internet that doesn't even go on in normal discourse. Glenn Reynolds, I think I'm talking about something that's really actual and palpable, that's out there. That is that people can do a lot more damage just by flaming and are impulsive about the nature of flaming that they don't necessarily even do face-to-face.
Well, there's certainly a lot of truth to the notion that people behave in ways on the Internet that they're not willing to behave face-to-face. But I also think that one way that blogs differ from other forms of communication where you see flaming, like, say, Usenet, is that you don't have to read a blog. And if there's a blog that flames a lot, you can read something else. And I have a tendency to. I find that too high a level of flaming, even especially for blogs I basically agree with, turns me off. And, you know, Nick Denton once said that the blogosphere roots around idiots. But that's not really right. If idiots are what you want, you can go right to them. You just get to choose in a way you don't when you're on an email list or, for that matter, even watching television.
Let's hear from some more of our callers. John from Sunnyvale, good morning.
Good morning. I'm just thinking that the blogs are analogous to alternative media sources like IF Stone's Weekly. You know, individual voice, no real insider connections. But definitely a position to present, and you judge the alternatives by their credibility.
It's an interesting analogy. You think about IF Stone's Weekly, or I was thinking about the original American Spectator, those kind of organs of thought and opinion by pretty much an individual. Those are sort of prototypes, aren't they, Josh Rubino?
Yeah, they are in a way. And the caller has it mostly right. The only place where I would point out that he is a bit wrong is that there sometimes are insider connections with blogs that one might not necessarily expect. A good example is a lot of the reporting that was done on Supreme Court nominee selections by Red State. And again, I wasn't a participant in this, but there was some good insider stuff there that didn't appear anywhere else.
Ed, let's get you on here. Good morning, Ed.
I'm on?
You're on.
Oh, it's actually Ed in Los Angeles, and I'm calling about public officials who set up blogs, and there's one in particular that I think is an interesting case in point. He's an L.A. County prosecutor named Patrick Fry, and his blog is called Paterico. And it, to me, these things raise questions of propriety when you have somebody like a prosecutor putting a lot of his opinions out there, not to mention the time he seems to spend on it at the expense of his duties as a prosecutor. And I'm wondering if your panel is aware of any situations where public officials have created ethical issues by spending quite so much time or putting their opinions out in public, and
you know,
public officials using the internet or using blogs. Who'd like to step up to the plate on this one?
Well, I can say that, you know, San Francisco Supervisor Chris Daley has a blog, and he actually uses it as an outreach tool for his constituents. So there definitely is a place for blogging and internet outreach in public life. And specifically referencing Paderico's pontifications, you kind of have to take that stuff on a case-by-case basis. If you can make a case that it's detracting from his official duties, then by all means do so. But it doesn't strike me that there's a hard and fast rule for blogging. Certainly, we've seen a lot of congressmen, or more accurately, congressmen staffers, blogging on various sites. And that's all for the good. It's a tool of constituent engagement. It's part of democracy.
I had an email here from a listener who says that USAT launched a real-time news blog yesterday called On Deadline. It's pretty straightforward, but don't think any other major media outlet is doing anything similar. See anything different or valuable about that, Anna Marie Cox?
I think I'm pretty sure that other mainstream media outlets are doing blogs. I think AP has one, actually. But I think that this is a good time to go back and remember what Marcos said about a blog being a publishing tool, as much like a word processor or a printing press. Just because USA Today is calling what they're doing a blog, I mean, doesn't make it anything like Wonkette, and doesn't make it anything like Instapundit or anything like what either Red State or Daily Coast are doing. I think probably I think the word blog just simply means, you know, updated in real time. And I wouldn't – there are some people who get very particular about what a blog is. Like, they say that if you don't have comments, you're not a real blog. If you get paid, you're not a real blog. But I think this is a case when we're really just describing a medium.
We've got seconds left here. I'd like everybody to have the opportunity to promote their blog. Anna Marie Cox, people can get onto Wonkette just by Wonkette.com, right?
Wonkette.com.
Josh Trevino, Red State.
Right now it's at redstate.com, and I am writing at spot-on.com.
And Marcos Melitzis?
Daily Coast, and I also have a book coming out in March called Crashing the Gate, Netroots, Grassroots, and the Rights of People, Power Politics.
And Glenn Reynolds?
Instapundit.com, and I also have a book coming out in March called An Army of Davids, How Technology and Markets Are Empowering Ordinary People.
And again, Anna Marie Cox will be here in San Francisco tomorrow with Tabitha Soren at 595 Market Street. In conversation for the Commonwealth Club. That's at 6:30, and Friday night, Barnes & Noble at Jack London Square in Oakland at 7:30. Thank you all for giving us insight into the portals of the blogosphere. Appreciate your being with us, all of you. Also want to extend thanks to our producers, Robin Giannatasio-Mal, Hermione G., and Kevin Guillory, and to our engineer, Danny Bringer. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez, and for all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.